Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, I'm Nick Mullins, and welcome along to this week's Rugby Tonight podcast, where I am joined by my commentary box husband, Benedict Kay.
Hello, Nick Mullins.
I've missed you. Where have you been? You've been busy, actually, haven't you?
I live.
You've been busy.
In the commentary box.
No.
And you've been in Scotland. How was that?
It was
Scottish.
It was chilly, actually. Yeah, no, very chilly. Very
did
chilly.
You go but to chilly?
Good
all
weekend.
The game was in Scotland.
No, we went to Edinburgh. And we'll have a chat about that as well.
Excellent.
My goodness, that was a good day. But yeah, you've been all over the place, haven't you?
Yes, lots of diverse rugby grounds over the last couple of weeks. So,
are you becoming more of a hobnobber? You're on the corporate trail.
Bit of a digestive. There are other biscuits available.
Yeah.
Well done. No, I've just been going around watching rugby for the love of the game, Nick.
Corporate Charlie, that's what you are. We are going to be looking ahead to the third weekend of international rugby on Saturday. Where are you on Saturday?
I'm at Twickenham.
Are you? In a nice box?
No.
Just an average
just
one.
Just wandering around Twickenham. Is there something happening?
We'll also be looking ahead to the Aviva Premiership. We're actually here in Broad Street Rugby Club, which is in Coventry. It's where Wasps do their weekday training. You'll have heard us mention it a lot during the programmes. And Broad Street are training here tonight. It's kind of an old school place, isn't it? We're in the players' lounge here, which is surrounded by lots of those little shield things, metal badges on bits of old pine or oak or whatever it is that you only tend to find in rugby clubhouses.
You're boring people now, Nick.
Yeah, I am.
There's a ping pong table.
There is a ping pong table.
But Wasps will no longer be able to play ping pong because you've sat on the ball and dented it.
No. But we feel an affinity to this place. I should fess up here because I do. So do you, actually, because the chef here fed you at the social event of last year, my wedding.
He was the chef at your wedding and I was the barman.
You were the barman and you were also
a turn. Thank you for that free drink.
You did some singing as well, which was great. So anyway, so we're at Broad Street RFC, great place where Wasps go about their week-to-week business. So loads going on at this time of year. It's the time of year, isn't it, where players start to talk about contracts and other clubs come in. They're not supposed to come
in. No, not allowed to talk to anyone else in the Premiership until January the 1st.
No, but despite that, there are lots of transfer rumours, confirmed transfer things. I've got a long list here. I'll just, in no particular order, I'll start at the top. One confirmed move, Finn Russell leaving Glasgow and heading to Racing 92.
Yeah, which might suggest that someone else from Racing 92, a fly half, might be leaving.
Dan Carter.
But I think that's quite a good move for him, actually. He'll be playing with some big names, superstars, so he'll be under pressure to perform. You get the impression, although Glasgow have been great over the last couple of years, they still have that tag a little bit of underdogs. When they're playing in Europe, Racing tend to have that tag of, well, you've got all these superstars, what are you going to do with them now? But it'll be great to see him being able to pull the strings for those guys.
Isn't it funny as well, and I'm sure this has happened lots of times before, but player plays well against one club one season, as Finn Russell did twice against Racing last year in the Champions Cup, and Jackie Lorenzetti or whoever it is says,
"Yes,
he would
particularly
be a
happens
player.
With the French, I think, but also he has played well a lot on the international stage, and as you know, they won't just solely base it on those two games. Maybe that would have been the light bulb moment that made them think, well, let's follow this guy's progress, but he was pretty bloody good all season last year, wasn't he?
Do you develop as a fly half in the French league I'm thinking of Johnny Sexton, who didn't. He really didn't enjoy it over there. Is there clearly he's going for big bucks, but is there an element of risk about this from his point of view?
I wonder whether he might suit it a little bit better, because his style of game... Johnny Sexton is very much about getting everything right and bossing everyone else around. I think Finn Russell has a little bit more of his own attacking intent, which is a little bit more French, isn't it? So they don't, you know, you speak to any of the guys that have gone and coached over there and they say it's totally different. You know, all the structure and planning that goes into our game over here just doesn't occur over there. So maybe that will help him and he will be able to bridge the gap with the knowledge he's gained over playing for Glasgow.
We're hearing tonight, we're recording this on Wednesday evening, so when we speculate about the England team that we will, we don't know what the England team is because it's Wednesday night. And we're hearing within the last couple of hours that Matt Banahan might be on his way from Bath, he is on his way at the moment because they've offered him a contract. But we're hearing it's not much better than the one he's been on for the last 3 or 4 years. And he's inclined, it seems, to look elsewhere.
Yeah, this is always difficult. Partly, you know, we haven't really got quotes from Matt Banahan. No. And often when this happens, you know, with my knowledge of what goes on, is that like the agents start to mention stuff to some of the journos to get a story to spike the interest in a certain player. Now, Matt Banahan is Bath through and through. He's been superb. But the clubs face a really difficult challenge in the fact that they have to stay within the salary cap. It's a bit of a jigsaw to put that together. Every year, every single player wants a pay rise. It's natural, isn't it? Most people in life would like a pay rise every time their contract's renewed. But even if you're adding 5-10 grand onto a player's contract every year, you do that across 40 players, and that's your marquee player gone. That's £400,000 that you have to think, and then you'll have to do it again next time. So clubs never really want to get rid of a player unless they're seen as being a bit poisonous in the environment, or you can get someone a lot better. And I'm sure Bath would love to keep Matt Banahan, but at the moment they value him at the same rate as they did, bearing in mind that he's a back and he'll be 31 years old, and you know, how long do you give someone a contract on that amount of money? When particularly the backs are getting slightly older, their speed, if you look at everyone else, tends to trail off a little bit. So it's a really difficult situation for them, because he is very much a loyal Bath man, and I'm sure he'd love to stay there. But if he's also probably aware that he's coming to the end, and if he can get more money elsewhere, it might be the right thing to do for his family. So it will just come down to whether someone comes in and values him higher than Bath. But it's not necessarily Bath shunning him. They just feel that in order to manage the rest of their squad, they can only offer him this amount of money.
I remember talking to a DOR once, who said that he was renegotiating with a front row forward with a prop, and the prop only wanted an extra 5,000-6,000 on top of what he was being offered, but the DOR got him into the office and said, listen, I've got 45 players that I need to look after here. I'd love to offer you an extra 5,000 or 6,000, but if everyone who comes in here asks for an extra 5,000 or 6,000 and I say yes, that's a sizable wedge out of our transfer kitty.
That's exactly it. The maths just don't add up.
No.
And that's why I think actually you'll see quite a lot more churning of players in that mid bracket. So the international superstars will still command higher and higher wages, and to tempt those big name players over, you're going to have to keep paying a little bit more to certain people. But I think below that, if guys continue to want more money and they can get more money elsewhere, clubs will say, well, you know, even if you've come through our academy system, once you get to a certain level, unless you're a bit of a superstar or vital to the team, we'll probably have to start again with an academy lad that's come through the system, and there might be a bit more churn of players.
Bristol is one of the clubs that Banners is being linked with. Gloucester's another, and both of those clubs are involved in a bit of speculation again this week. That Johnny Gray to Bristol thing won't go away. Johnny Gray saying, I've not made up my mind yet, but it's still there, and the longer it stays there, the more inclined you are to think there's something in it.
Yeah, I mean, lots of people being linked with Bristol, as you'd expect. Obviously, a lot of money at the club, and ambition, and this time around, I think they'll feel, well, they can, because the playoff system's changed in the Championship, they can attract players. It was never really just about the money in terms of them not being quite ready for the start of the Premiership last time they were up. It was the fact that, did you want to hold your hand up and say, well, I know you haven't quite got promoted this year, and we've seen it a couple of times in years gone by of you signing players and then them having to play in the Championship. I think there's a lot of players that don't want to play in the Championship, even if they're getting paid a lot of money. That changes now. So the players can commit to Bristol earlier, and that means that we'll see Bristol linked to more and more players as they look to make sure they have a squad that's capable of staying in the Premiership when they come up.
The thing that strikes me as well about Jonny Gray is that it's a different kind of signing. It's not the kind of Ian Evans type signing that they were doing a few years ago.
Yeah.
This guy's 23, 24. He's got the rest of his career ahead of him.
Oh, look, he is, not only is he a great player, but his style of play is sort of what you need to build the team ethos around. Hardly ever misses a tackle, works exceptionally hard, will carry for you. He's just a really good, reliable player that will front up every week.
Yeah. I was down in Gloucester yesterday saying hello to Johan Ackerman for the first time. And a lot of chat around Hartbury, around about where Ross Moriarty is going to be playing next season. And he's been caught in this net with his contract up at the end of the season. George North is another one who's told us that he's leaving Northampton today. He's another one who, if he wants to carry on playing Test match rugby at the moment, has to go back to Wales, and that's precisely where Ross Moriarty finds himself at the moment.
Yeah. Does George North need to? Will he get to the 60 caps if he's not there already?
He can't be far away, can he?
So that's probably, you know, that's not necessarily
it's
the case
slightly
with
different,
George,
isn't it?
But yeah. You know, quite admirable that he might want to go home as well and play his rugby at home.
Yeah.
In terms of Ross Moriarty, as it stands, it would appear that he has to go to Wales. There's a lot of talk between the different regions about where he will go. A little bit of people trying to stir up a bit of controversy if he does go to Newport Gwent Dragons, which seem favourites at the moment, because obviously the WRU took them over recently. Mm. Doing great things under Bernard Jackman, but if he goes there, I think there might be quite a few other supporters of other regions crying foul that, well, the WRU have just plunked him into their...
It makes sense, though, doesn't it? If they're the weakest region around at the moment, if you're bringing in players like Ross Moriarty, you need to restock
four,
empty shelves.
Four strong regions.
Yeah.
I think you're right.
So does George North go to the Dragons as well, based on that theory?
Well, no. I mean, maybe that's a bit of a softener for the WRU that he might go back from whence he came. Mm-hmm. And he was Scarlets, wasn't he? Was George North Scarlets?
Yeah.
North Whalian.
Yeah.
Good North Whalian.
Mike Phillips.
Doing
a Sinatra.
I love it.
He's coming out of retirement for just a couple of games.
His retirement home in Dubai, where he now lives, to make the short hop over to South Africa and play the two South African legs. So, look great. Yeah, they're drastically down on scrum halves. Two away with Wales. I think one of the others is injured. So they are literally... They tried checking the bare cupboards and seeing whether any of the chefs could play, and they couldn't. So Mike Phillips has answered the call, and he's sort of personality that will probably come out and get two man of the match performances, and good on him.
Yeah, he'll love it. He'll love it.
But the other thing about Ross Moriarty, going back to that. I know we'd moved off that topic. Again, it's that little bit of misunderstanding where stuff really should be kept behind closed doors. And, it's a little bit created by the media, because some journalist has asked Johan Ackerman about what's happening with Ross Moriarty. He says, I haven't spoken to him. He hasn't approached me. This gets written into a...
Ross Moriarty was seen in the Celtic Manor Hotel having a cup of coffee with his dad, Paul, a week or so ago. And inevitably, we then have two and two making six.
Yeah,
maybe.
I know. And then obviously Ackerman says, well, he hasn't approached me. And then we get this tweet from Ross Moriarty saying, sorry, I didn't know when I signed my last contract.
Not feeling the love.
It was down to me to come to you.
No.
But I guess it is, really. I don't know whether Ross Morrissey has an agent, but usually, again, the agents would be knocking on, if a player wants to go somewhere, would be knocking on the door pretty early on, trying to secure a contract for next season. So we'll see what happens on that and how it plays out. But I don't think it's great when stuff has to be played out on Twitter, as Ross Moriarty does. But
I think it's brilliant.
In his defence, for all those Gloucester fans, he doesn't have a recourse to come back and get, you know, if he doesn't tweet out there that actually it's not just because I'm desperate to leave.
No.
But how else does he get the message out there?
No. And I didn't see him at Hartbury yesterday. Rumours.
Didn't see him at,
he wasn't
didn't see
there.
Him at,
he
allegedly.
Wasn't there. No, allegedly not there.
He might have been in the toilets.
He might have been. Brad Shields.
That's a good
New
signing
Zealand
here. Yeah, he'll
flanker.
Be getting used to this place. He'll
yeah,
be
coming to Wasps next
ping
season.
Ping pong with one of the balls that you've damaged,
yeah.
Nick.
Yeah.
I think that's a great signing. He is a tremendous player. Played against the Lions for the Hurricanes on the summer tour. And he is absolute quality. Lots of rumours that...
There's a subtext to this, isn't there?
There is, isn't there?
Yeah, he's about England qualifying.
He's coming here, you would think, not only to sample the delights of Coventry and Broad Street Rugby Club, but because he wants to play international rugby, and he's not going to be playing international rugby in an All Black shirt. He might be playing in a black shirt because it's currently England's second strip.
Yeah.
But he wants to play international rugby, and he qualifies for England. I'm pretty sure the England coaching staff know all about him already and would be pretty keen to have him as an option. So great signing for Wasps. I'm sure there would have been a lot of clubs that were looking to secure his services, and he's chosen here. So he will be one of the big names when we run through who the new transfers are at the start of next season.
I guess it puts a question mark next to James Haskell's name, who I know and has made it very clear that he's looking for a new contract. So he's out of contract here at the end of this season.
Yeah, I'm sure it will, because, again, without knowing sort of the ins and outs, and I'm just speculating, but you'd think that James Haskell would be on a decent amount of money here at Wasps. You're not going to get Brad Shields for peanuts. So, again, it's all about what we were talking about, the jigsaw puzzle of putting together that team. Now, yes, you will carry a number of back row players on reasonable money, but still the big money, you'd think, is for a select few. And they've still got Nathan Hughes.
Guy Thompson. Sam Jones, if he comes back from injury. I love this time of year not just because of the autumn internationals, but this transfer speculation is great. I think one of the best things about football is the fact that you get to talk about who might be signing who at various points during the season. I sometimes wonder whether actually we should just allow transfers to happen throughout the season.
Yeah.
And I know it's happening a little bit more and more, Marlon Yard, for example, but, you know, just have an open market. Whenever you want to, if you need to bring somebody in, bring them in whenever you need them. If the move works for both clubs and the players, why not do it?
Well, I think you... Can you not? If both clubs agree to it, you just have to speak to the player first. You have to speak to the club first. So, we've seen it a couple of times. We see players go out on loan. John Okito made his Harlequins debut this week, but having gone on loan to Worcester beforehand for a short period of time.
Yep.
So I think as long as both clubs agree to it, and actually that is very, very important, because one club might be desperate because of injuries for someone to cover one position, but might have a little bit of extra, might be carrying, because of contract lengths and things, might be carrying a little bit of extra timber in other areas. Mm. And without shifting those players, you can't find room in your salary cap. So once you shift a player out of the contract and he moves elsewhere, he then leaves your salary cap. So if you're right up to the cap, it's the only way of addressing some of those issues.
It always strikes me that if there was a criticism that you would level at British coaches, English coaches specifically, in recent times, it's that they don't go abroad enough to get experience of other leagues, other cultures. And it brings us on to Ronan O'Gara, who we've heard today is leaving Racing 92 a little bit earlier in his contract to become backs coach at the Crusaders in the new year.
not a bad place to go either. If you're going to be a backs coach of any team, the Crusaders have got some decent backs for you to look good. You wouldn't necessarily want to go to some of the provinces that aren't doing so well with limited resources. But it would be great for him. Don't you love the way he's done it?
He could have so easily have made a very nice living for himself, staying in Munster, staying in Limerick, but he's not done that. He's taken himself out of his comfort zone and continues to learn.
Absolutely. And I think you're right. Just learning all those different styles, it's something that New Zealand coaches have done probably, for all the coach development, a lot of that might have been the fact that the money tends to be bigger for coaches up here. So, the likes of those New Zealand coaches that aren't on a direct pathway to the All Blacks system, which tends to be what the ambition is, they can come and earn some decent money and upskill themselves at the same time. I think it'll probably be the opposite for Rog. He's going from...
You think he's taking a pay cut?
He must be. Unless Racing are sponsoring it and they want him back, or I don't know. But he will be on, by coaching standards, a very high wage down there, down at Racing. It's Super Rugby for an assistant coach will not get near that. So it is about his development, I think.
I was surprised. I was talking to somebody, and clearly I will not mention names here. I was surprised that the wages that some of the Premiership's more specialised coaches are on. I think this would be of interest to some people. If you're a backs coach at whatever Premiership club it might be at the moment, you're probably on 40, 50, 60. I mean, that's the kind of level that I'm hearing. If you want to have some kind of context as to what you will earn as a backs or a forwards coach in the Premiership at the moment, maybe a little bit more.
It's no different to the players. It's supply and demand. If you can do something, or you're perceived that you can do something that no one else can, and you're vitally important for a team, they will push the boat out to keep you. If they think that... what you do is quite easily replaceable, then the money's not going to be huge. I think there's also a big difference between, you get the impression with some clubs, there's a coaching team that maybe share the money a little bit. At some clubs, there's a guy at the top who, will make sure that he's paid pretty well, but he's driving it totally. And then below him are coaches that the club might say, well, they're interchangeable.
Let's talk about the big talking point to come out of the England-Australia game, or the one that's continuing to rumble at the moment. Michael Checker chopsing off to the fourth official at half-time. We all saw it on the telly. We don't yet know if he's going to get a slap across the wrist, whether he's going to be fined or whatever, because it's Wednesday night and we've not seen anything yet. Do you feel comfortable that he's in the dock over what we saw last weekend?
Yes, because not necessarily just over what we saw, but there are a few accusations that he had a bit of a row with some fans and things on his way down. So, look, you've got to be very careful. I do worry a little bit if it's, there was a court, David Campese. I don't know why I was listening to him. He's gone a bit mad, I think. But he said that Eddie Jones the week before should face a fine or a ban for swearing on TV. Well, if you've got a camera pointing at you the whole game, which they have a little camera in their box, don't they, so that they can get their reactions when they score a try. I think us as TV companies have to be a bit careful what we show.
I thought it
was a great moment to see, wasn't it?
It was,
And any director would want that to go out. But equally, we have to, these are guys that, in effect, their jobs are on the line. And when something bad happens, they are going to react like most people sat at home when something bad happens and throw something at the telly. and I'm a bit careful about that. Where Checker may face a bit more scrutiny is him walking down the steps and... clearly remonstrating with anyone who'd listen, but particularly the fourth official and getting in the technical area. I think it's just a common sense. I couldn't tell you what he said or anything, so I couldn't say whether it's right that he's in the dock, but I think you have to give them a little bit of leeway.
I noticed that one of England's clever tactical decisions at the weekend was to position Steve Borthwick right in front of that camera this week that caught Eddie mouthing off last week. So whenever the director tried to cut to Eddie, more often than not, you got Steve Borthwick's schnoz.
Yeah, rather not than the most explosive not, guy. As
not,
well,
not, Borthers, not,
is he?
Not so the most
bit,
explosive.
Bit calmer, maybe.
Do you know what I absolutely get what you're saying about Checker. One of the things that struck me watching, and I've watched the match back twice now, was the number of times, not just the coaches, but also the players on the pitch in a match that was full of big decisions. I thought Ben O'Keefe got a really rough ride from the players. And I think we're almost at that point where we need to redraw the line in the sand and say, hang on a minute, we've gone beyond what is acceptable in the way that we talk to referees during the game.
So World Rugby often put edicts out there, don't they, through their referees department, that they're going to clamp down on players talking. I'm sure we'll get another one of those. It's down to the referee to manage that. Would you hear players being quite so vocal to Nigel Owens? Probably not, because they'd put them in their place. The players have a responsibility as well. I think it shows the different character of some players. You know, Sam Warburton, very calm with the referees, just goes and tries to put an arm around him and say, just explain that one, referee. Owen Farrell is a very upfront, honest guy, and if he sees something, he'll shout it out. You know, again, a bit like the people watching on telly. It's very difficult. And that's what, you know, as a player, I know what it's like. When you see a knock-on or something, as when you're watching at home on the telly, your instant reactions to point at it and go, oh, knock on. And, you know, it's not necessarily sort of shouting at the ref to influence him. It's just because your natural reaction is, when you've seen something, to shout it out. Having said that, you know, certainly with Clive Woodward, there was a piece done on how do we manage that relationship with the referee. Because the ideal situation is that referees love refereeing your team, because you don't give away many penalties, so most teams would spend a lot of time on trying not to give away penalties. It's the biggest killer of your performance. Managing that relationship with the referee, both before the game, and I know that Checker wouldn't meet with the referee, but Eddie Jones was really keen to meet with him. But again, just to highlight some of your fears going into the game, so that you don't have those issues of, you know, well, we warned you about it before the game. But finally, on the pitch, how you manage that. In 2003, in the lead up to that, we realised that Jono is one of those honest guys that wouldn't sort of pander to a referee, would go up and tell him exactly what he thought. He was a big, domineering character, 6'7", towering above with his finger pointing at him. And so actually during that 03 World Cup, Jono was banned from speaking to the referees, and the decision was made you'd send the smallest person on the field up to gently just discuss it with them. So Matt Dawson was chosen, yeah. Which was great, apart from most of the referees hated Dawson anyway. So, but it was, you know, that was something that we said, look, let's not get in his face. And I know around 2003, we had that reputation that referees liked refereeing us. We didn't give away many penalties. And, you know, we accepted them when the penalties were given, got back. And then when the time was right, on the way to the next line out or vice versa, Dawson would go and have a quiet word in their ear.
And the best referees I know love the interaction. You know, we don't want to over-sanitise the game. But I just felt uneasy too many times during Saturday afternoon. You'll have your own views on that. Let's quickly rattle through some of those decisions that got Checker and Hooper so upset. Hooper's offside from the kick through, very briefly, right decision?
On the face of it, yes, because so although the ball's kicked again before Hooper plays it, he doesn't stop. So when that initial kick's made, he's in an offside position and he continues to run forward. You're meant to stop and wait for the guy, or run backwards. Really, you're meant to run backwards to get onside and wait for the guy to accelerate past you. And then you're onside and you can keep going. So despite the fact that by the time the second kick's made, Hooper's in an onside position, he never actually retreated. So by the letter of the law, it's right. But had that one been given, I'm not 100% sure that anyone would have had any qualms.
The Beale yellow for the knock-on.
Again, it's something that's I hate seeing a yellow for it because it's an instinct. By the time you've realised you shouldn't be doing it, your hand's already out. You make a natural, you see there's someone shaping to pass it, the ball's released from their hands, and you stick your hand out to try and catch it. Again, how we've seen it refereed, it probably is a yellow. The only thing I'd say, I'm not sure the break was on, which might, for me, have made it a penalty only.
Actually, we missed the Hooper yellow as well for a series of offences.
Yeah, well, that's the referee's decision. He said, you know, it's not your first one. You've had one. Yeah. You've had three. So.
Yeah. Stephen Moore's offside for the try that was disallowed late on. My instinct, as soon as I saw that, was that he's interfering with Chris Robshaw's ability to make the tackle cleanly here.
So there's a number of issues with that. First of all, what Stephen Moore did, exactly the same as what Scott Britz did for Saracens on Friday night. And that one stood as well, so inconsistency there. The other thing that a lot of Australians are saying is that Chris Robshaw was in an offside position. But he was retreating onside, and by the time he attempted to make the tackle, he was behind the back foot and the ball carrier had run 5 metres, so he's not in an offside position regardless of whether it looked like he was offside. But it certainly it affected the shot that Chris Robshaw could get on the tackler. He couldn't make as forceful a hit. So again, it's very easy to say I'm English, but absolutely right.
And just to put the tin lid on it, Australians will tell us that the ball that Elliot Daly chased down was in row X when it bounced and it was out.
From the footage I've seen, it was in, but I only really saw it in the stadium, and there was one camera angle that pointed directly down the line and one that was from off the pitch. And that camera angle was repeatedly shown. The one down the line was only shown once, and that was the one that looked suspect to me. So I think the Australians have a case in point that other angle should have been shown more often just to make sure. But from the angle we saw with the zoom in that the TV directors did, it was still in field.
For the record, my refereeing mole, tells me...
Can you get that removed?
Yeah, you can actually get a wart with some laser surgery. World Rugby review all these decisions as the RFU do on a Monday at Twickenham. World Rugby reviewed Ben O'Keefe's display last weekend, and he got every decision right in their mind. So there we go. The debate will continue this weekend. Australia going to Murrayfield. Did you see me and Big McJim?
I
were doing the game
on
Saturday.
It was in the background after the game.
Yes.
But stunning performance. Great after Zinzan Brook had predicted 60 a 60-point thrashing by the All Blacks to see Scotland turn up like that. The scene set by Doddy Weir carrying the
wasn't
ball
that
out.
Amazing?
Oh,
wasn't
just,
that amazing?
You know, tears to the eyes stuff. So the reaction of Kieran Reid as well when he delivered the ball, shows what a great rugby man he is.
Yeah, Beauden Barrett as well. Barrett was there.
Yeah, look, it was just a super start to a super game, and you know, one pass goes to hands at the end, and you get the biggest upset in rugby.
I think, and even some of my closest Scottish friends would agree with this, that occasionally the build-up to matches at Murrayfield is absolutely brilliant. And it's not quite matched by what we see once the game gets underway. But actually, the wave of emotion that was created by Doddy and his three sons and all that went before that game actually was carried on by the performances of people like Stuart Hogg. They were just magnificent for the whole 80 minutes as well, Scotland.
Look, it was... It's just gutting when they don't come up with the final victory because in the end we'll end up forgetting about that game when actually it could have been... for you, Nick, it could have been an I was there moment.
And for Jim Hamilton. You might not have heard Jim Scott. He was. Anyone who says that Jim does not care about Scotland needed to be sitting in the commentary box with us. He was just going ballistic when Stuart Hogg was running.
There is a wider talking point of whether New Zealand are quite the force they were. Now, I know in 4 years cycles, we always talk about, are New Zealand quite the team they were? But I just wonder whether the lack of competition they've maybe faced in the championship for a couple of years has started to affect their performances and they're not quite accelerating at the same speed they were. Having said that, I think this tour will be a seminal moment for them. With 2 years to go to a World Cup, I think they'll reassess all that and they'll kick on again.
They still put some lovely stuff together, some of the tries that they scored.
They've got great players.
So having come within 5 metres of at least getting a draw with the All Blacks, but expect Scotland now to beat Australia. Is that fair enough?
No. I think Australia were, having lost by their record ever margin to England last week when they didn't deserve to, they could have easily won that game. Australia, they look a vastly improved team. I thought England actually were really good because they were put under massive pressure by a very good Australian team. And I think the worst thing that could have happened for Scotland is for them to have played, in terms of this week, is for them to have played so well and not won, and Australia to have played well and got thrashed, or relatively thrashed if you look at the scoreboard, because that's going to be a very tough game for them now.
We've got Scotland-Australia, BT Sport 2 on Saturday at 2:15 with them.
Anyone good commentating?
No, it's Ali.
Oh, he's very good.
Yeah, no, he's on with Big McJim.
Sort of like a McHamilton. Much younger, more handsome Nick Mullins, isn't
he's,
he?
He's much, much, yes, both of those. England-Samoa. We don't know what the team is yet because, as we said, we're recording this on Wednesday night. Eddie Jones naming his team.
I think we'll see a few
on Thursday.
A few newer faces, yeah, to the starting lineup.
And we've kind of had a clue here because Nathan Hughes is injured, so he's come back here to Broad Street. George Cruz has been let go. Jonathan Joseph has been let go. Anthony Watson's been let go, which opens up some interesting possibilities.
Yeah, I think we might see Jamie George finally get his England start. Most capped player
off the bench. Yeah, yeah. Without
getting a start.
Yes. Yeah. Is it 19 now or something?
Unbelievable. So I think we might well see that. You'd think that Mako Vunipola might have earned a rest. So will we see Ellis Genge start, Joe Marler off the bench, or vice versa? But obviously Joe playing last week. Fullback, I think Brownie probably come back in looking at who he's got available, unless he looks at Elliot Daly there. With Johnny May and Rocco Degudi on.
Well, he's always talking about having three options at fullback, and he tried Anthony Watson there last week. So he's not yet seen Daly at fullback.
No, so that will be that's a potential there. He knows exactly what Mike Brown can do for him.
Yeah,
and then inside backs. Will Stanley Care? Do you think he'll get a start? He played very well off the bench. Maybe just give Youngs a bit of a rest, but also see Youngs' impact off the bench. Just change it up a bit. I think Danny Kerr's probably deserved a shot running the show. Maybe to look at the combination between... I think Ford and Farrell could well start at 10 and 12 anyway,
yeah.
In which case you'd think Kerr would start to look at that combination.
Yeah.
Having said that, if Farrell starts at 10, then maybe you go for Youngs, just so you're not changing everyone and losing your structure.
Farrell captain, by the way, if he doesn't start with Dylan Hartley, do you think?
Yeah.
Who?
There are a few people have talked about Maro Itoje before, potentially an opportunity to look at him. Is he an out and out captaincy candidate at the moment? I think he'll grow into it, but he's still a bit raw in terms of how many times he's captained Saracens and things. So I'm not 100% sure, to be honest. I don't think it's a massive deal.
No.
Again, without sort of wanting to harp back to the good old days, sort of when Jono wasn't captain, it didn't actually matter whether it was Lawrence, Matt Dawson, Neil Back. It was just a senior figure.
Actually, no, one of the things that struck me about watching it last week, and it's something that Eddie Jones has talked about a lot, the level of fitness, England's level of fitness, and you can talk about the margin of victory perhaps being a little bit flattering, but over that last 10-15 minutes, they were still going strong. They were looking significantly stronger than Australia in those closing moments.
Oh, look, they're working exceptionally hard. I saw them working in Portugal, and high intensity sessions, but not just on the training. On the rugby section of it, they would do a bit of rugby and then go off and work on their sprint work, or the different players working under fatigue at their skill sets. So we've seen the scrum halves doing a passing drill at maximum intensity, and the hookers might go off when they're tired and throw some throws to Steve Borthwick. So really bright use of their time, I think.
Other internationals this weekend: Wales, New Zealand. It's the Gatland show leading up to it. What do you reckon?
Just worry slightly about some of their injury problems. It was a poor performance, obviously, last week, but with a weakened side anyway. But the side that they're going to play this week is probably not quite as strong as they want it to be either. So, and New Zealand on the bounce back from what happened last week up in Scotland, they won't get caught cold twice.
Did you have a view, by the way, on you may well have seen it, the business of the uncontested scrums towards the end when Georgia were pressing for what might have been a try to draw the game.
I hate it.
Yeah.
And what are we going to call it? The
the Slimani effect.
Well, it's the allegedly salami.
Allegedly
salami.
Allegedly effect. Salami effect. Where you have two players. Here's the top line. Two players who've been replaced tactically. We are told, yeah, the cards tell us, stripped down, ready to come back on.
Warm back up.
To come back into the front
row. Pull the calf on the watt bike.
And then all of a sudden they develop cramp.
Yeah. Look, it's horrible because it taints the game, but you're not 100% sure, are you? And the way of counteracting it potentially means that we get just as many problems with teams punished when they've got injured players.
Yeah. And Ireland against Argentina, it's going to be interesting to see what kind of side Ireland play, because they were brilliant against South Africa, less so against Fiji. But if they kind of revert to that side that beat the box,
their best side out.
They'll see
you can't the finish on a damp squib, can you?
A damp squid.
Squib.
As our friend calls
Austin
it sometimes.
Squid. Most squids are damp.
Aviva Premiership as well. We've got two live games on BT Sport.
Rainbow Laces.
Rainbow Laces. Tell us about Rainbow Laces.
Well, the Aviva Premiership and the Rugby Players Association have teamed up with Stonewall for this week. So it is a game that is all about diversity and equality, and to show that rugby welcomes everyone. And I think it's great for a sport like rugby that's seen as this sort of macho environment and you know, potentially back in the past wasn't very welcoming to all. And I think we've now proven that we are, and it's great to be at the forefront of it.
And I know just across the way, Pudsey the Wasps kit man here at Broad Street has been busy lacing the boots with those rainbow laces today. So yeah, they will be they'll be running.
Captain's armbands floating around, rainbow captain's armbands.
Brilliant, brilliant. Let's have a look at our two games. Newcastle, Gloucester, BT Sport 2, 4K UHD on Friday, 7 o'clock. Craigo, Hughes, you as well, and Jim Hamilton, and me. The A team.
I look forward to that.
Yeah, or the B team, or the C team. Quickly, Newcastle going to St James's Park against Northampton in March.
When I first saw it, I thought, oh no, because I thought that's not going to fill it, and I hate empty stadiums for showpiece games. Everyone's tried to copy Harlequins, because Harlequins started the big game series. Yeah. Full stadium, great entertainment, cracking added value to the season. And I hate it when there's an empty stadium and teams rattling around. And Newcastle won't get anywhere near filling St James's Park. I think they're aiming for 20,000 people, which is more than what their ground can hold. Having said that, it makes a bit of sense in the context that not this year's European Cup final, but next year's European Cup finals are both at St James's Park. So, again, proving that St James is a decent rugby venue and giving us a bit of a warm-up flavour. Also, for Newcastle, hopefully, if they can get some PR and attraction to rugby in the northeast by the fact that it's a bit surprising that rugby is going to be played at St James's Park, then they get the European Cup finals and you get a few people going to watch those. Suddenly people start to talk about rugby in the northeast, which isn't done enough at the moment, and so could be good in terms of growing their fan base. But I still don't like empty stadiums for showpiece games.
And they're playing Gloucester, who have actually been moving in the opposite direction
this
to the
week.
Falcons.
It's Northampton
Northampton. Yeah, Northampton in March. They're playing Gloucester this week. It's so tight in that middle section that Falcons have lost a couple and have dropped down. Gloucester have won some on the bounce and have moved up. They're fifth now. And I was at Harbury yesterday. When any new coach comes in, every single player will tell you that it feels different, that there's a new energy. But I saw that with my own eyes at training yesterday. There is a new energy. There's a bounce about the place at the moment.
Yeah, I think Newcastle have been slightly affected by the autumn internationals. I think they've also...
They missed Hakkilaa.
They also got on a roll playing some teams that were below them and things that got them up into that and took all the pressure that they're not used to not being under because they're in a relegation dogfight off them. And they've looked a lot better as a result. They've played some brilliant rugby, Newcastle. If it was at King's Home, I'd sort of say that Gloucester were out and out favourites. Having said that, Gloucester off the back of a huge win against Saracens, can they back it up away from home? King's Home has been a fortress for them of late, but they haven't been so good on their travels.
Tell you one of the interesting things, they haven't been so good on their travels, but because Johan Ackerman is used to going huge distances in Super Rugby, he's actually changed their schedule this week, and rather than going up the day before, they're going up 24 hours earlier than they would have done, because he thinks that any trip on a coach over 4 or 5 hours... on Boris bikes, takes it out of you, and you actually need an extra night in the city than you would normally have. So they've
and a good city to have a night
and a good
out.
As long as you're not going to Madame Coo's, then you're going to be well prepared for the game.
Look, it's that toss up between for some players it'll suit them. Some players, if they could, would sleep every night the night before a game in their own bed and prefer that sort of habit of being in and around their home comforts. So I'm sure it'll suit some of the players, but it's one of those things that whenever a coach changes something, if you think it's good as a player, you're desperate to win so that you repeat it. So I remember we once, first and only time Leicester ever flew to Newcastle, we flew up on the morning of the game, lost, and we knew that was it now. We were going to have to come up to Newcastle the night before every single game. So yeah. Coaches are still slightly superstitious.
Newcastle, Gloucester, other games on Saturday. Let's quickly get the predictions. BT Predictor, Bath, Quins, Leicester, Worcester, Sale, Saints. Where are you going on those three games? Bath, Quins first.
I'll say Bath because it's at home. But these might change before I do my predictions.
Okay.
Just caveat
we'll allow you that license. Leicester, Worcester.
Leicester at home against Worcester. Great win for Worcester last week. Be very difficult for them to back it up again. They'll benefit from their confidence, but I'm expecting a Leicester win, but not a massive one.
Actually, just very briefly, I put this out on Twitter last week. Is there a player, a single player, more important to any one club than Francois Houhard to Worcester?
Potentially not, no. Just the extra speed around the breakdown, both in terms of going himself, but... how he can get the back line moving. Because they played really well, Worcester, didn't they? They did some good stuff.
Yeah, and actually he got back and said, it's not just about me. There were lots of players. Bryce Eam got a hat-trick, so there were lots of players playing well at the moment.
Sale Northampton. Some of it was about me.
Some of it was about me, but not all of it, but most of it. Sale Northampton.
Big challenge for Northampton. I'm going to go for Sale, just because dented confidence from what happened. You'd expect a bit of a fight back, but I don't know, feeling at Sale, I think Sale.
Okay, and you can't shake me off because we're together again on Sunday. You can't.
I don't want to do that.
You can't, even if you use both. Even if you use both hands.
Don't lock that door. Don't lock the door. I feel uncomfortable.
Saracens Exeter, BT Sport 2 on Sunday.
Again, at Saracens. Lazowski's been kept, has he, by England?
Yeah.
That's a big thing for me. So, Lazowski kept by England... Farrell kept by England. Do they play Malins at 10? Do they play Alex Good at 10? I would have said Saracens, bar that.
Yeah. They love Exeter. Max Malins, by the way.
Yeah, look, I know. But, yeah, it's a big responsibility and top of the table clash.
Yeah.
And Exeter will go for him massively. So, apart from it, I don't think it's necessarily will that dent Saracens. I think it'll just lift Exeter and it will give them a focus on a game plan to go after him. But you know, tough to call because they're great sides. But I think there's a lot of teams, the likes of Bath, Leicester, just below, who are going, well, these two are playing each other this weekend. We have to win so that we can capitalise and catch up a two that have been starting to sneak away from everyone else.
The other game on Sunday, Irish against our hosts tonight, Wasps at the Medeski.
Look. You'd have to say Wasps because having had a pretty awful start to the season, things are going against them. But it's amazing if you look back at Premiership seasons of past when the bottom team wins, the second from bottom team somehow the following week gets a victory.
And they've got to, haven't they?
Yeah.
They've absolutely got to start winning.
I still think London Irish will be looking at Worcester. I don't think they'll be pressing panic buttons because they've still got to play Worcester twice.
Yeah.
So I think they just say, we'll win those two and we're fine at the moment. But it would help them enormously if they got a victory. But I can't see it happening. Wasps.
That's it. I missed you, big boy.
Thank you.
I'll be sick of the sight of you by Sunday night.
Well,
but
I'm
at
still
the moment,
not shaking you off.
No. Darts or ping pong now? What do you reckon?
Darts.
Yeah, okay.
Very sharp ones.
Thank you. Getting blunter by the year. Thank you very much for listening to this Rugby Tonight podcast.
Thank you.
We are back. That's okay. We're back in the studio next week. You in the studio next week? Very special guest, Mako Vonopola, who will be chatting about England's autumn campaign and all things Saracens as well. Remember to subscribe to this pod. It is delivered straight to your device on Thursday mornings. If you've enjoyed listening today, give us a 5-star rating. If you haven't, please still give us a 5-star rating because we're quite nice. And review us on iTunes as well. Say goodbye, Benedict.
Goodbye, Benedict.
Goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.